So before we start today's sermon, let's all bring our arms together to pay our veneration to the Perfect One, the Supremely Enlightened One, the Infinitely Compassionate One, the Unvanquished One. He is the founder of all wisdom, who attained the supreme bliss of Nibbana without the help of anyone else. Without him, there would be no teacher to guide us. To that remarkable feat, we make our veneration today, having the privilege and honor to follow his footsteps steadfastly towards the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, which lies clearly set in front of us, thanks to the great master and to all great teachers who had followed him since. Let us also remind ourselves, as we bring our palms together in veneration, that this is not a mere respect, but this is also a chance to renew our pledge of allegiance to the Noble Triple Gem, reminding ourselves that the Buddha represents the ultimate destination, the Dhamma, the path, the Sangha, the practice. And with all that in our minds, let us take this moment to chant Namaskara, seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, and observe the precepts and commence today's proceedings. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. I wonder what you might be thinking right now, because this is not the face that you have been expecting. I'm sorry to disappoint you. But when Nayaka Thero told me this, about this opportunity, when I had this immense opportunity to talk to you all, who is none other than our extended family, my heart was filled with joy, because I have many things to tell you, and I have heard many things about you all, the Dharmishtha Rajagiriyans. But alas, you don't get the chance to listen to the great teacher. But nonetheless, we all try our best to seek the advantage of the opportunity that is currently is set in front of us. Therefore, I would like to share these thoughts with you all, because with the compassion of our teachers, you all have got the exposure to the immeasurable, and which doesn't have any value, which cannot be valued in any form, which is the pristine Dhamma, which have saved us all of this, from the infinite journey of the samsara. Therefore, I know every one of you all have this respect towards the great masters whom we have come across, and the master being the Dhamma, And we cannot meet Dhamma by ourselves. We have to meet the Dhamma through the great teachers in a lively form, through a person. That is how we meet the Dhamma. That is when we realize that this Dhamma can really be applied in our day-to-day life. That is when the realization happens. And with that realization, you all are here today. And isn't it the day that you have reserved for most of the stuff that you have been accumulating through the week? But still, you make that big sacrifice because you know that with the teachings, with the application, and with the change that happens within your hearts and minds, you will become more productive, and you have become more productive, and that is the evidence which lies in your heart and mind, which tells you that this is the path, this is nothing but else. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate all the effort that you make towards stepping towards something that some of you, not all of you, might feel that it is far and distant from where you are now. I also thought the same. And I was in the audience like you all are sitting today. And to this date, I can remember how I thought that day. I felt like keeping my head over the footsteps of my great teachers, and I wanted to seek refuge of the teachings of the Buddha. And I thought to myself, no, it is never possible for me, for a person like me. Is it ever possible? No, that's a big dream. That is how I thought. And why am I telling this to you all? Because some of you might be thinking the same. It's not true. This realization can happen right in the place where you are. You don't have to shave your head for that, or you don't have to have a robe for that. It just needs the realization that occurs in our minds. Therefore, the merits that we all do together, that is the fuel for this engine. The engine requires fuel, and with the power of fuel, it starts and it keeps on running. And of course, fuel is something that is consumed. We cannot take it for granted. It finishes. It is consumed by the engine. Therefore, we have to keep on doing and engaging in merits. And it is something that you all do. You all are so creative in doing meritorious deeds. Especially, I have to tell you something about that very recently happened. So as you know, in our monastery, we have about almost 700 residents. 650. So, there's a small medical center which we have come up with the help of you all, of course, to ensure the health and safety of the residents. And of course, the doctors and all the healthcare providers are you all. You all provide the healthcare for the residents, and it is just a building. And we provide you the patients. We are the patients for you all. And we recently received a very valuable donation from the Dharmishtha Rajagiriyans. And I want to make sure that you are aware of this, of the merits that you do. So this is something among the many that you do. I just want to make your attention, focus on your attention about this thing and how we rejoice in the merits that you all engage in. So this is regarding an autoclave machine which is used to sterilize the wound dressing items that we use daily, day in and day out. So this machine is being used to sterilize all the equipment which are used to dress a wound, or maybe to suture a wound. If it's a deep cut, we stitch in our medical center, because we are equipped with doctors as well as the other healthcare providers among ourselves. And it comes, this machine is a big help for that. And we have the Anagarika monastery just around our monastery, just 1 kilometer away from the monastery, and they also help us by packing the gauze and the wound dressing materials, and they prepare in small packs to be sterilized. And so when we see that it's happening right in front of us, but a thought came to my mind. With an each piece of gauze which is being sterilized and which is used to clean a wound of someone who has one goal of realizing the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, what a great amount of merits that would be acquired by the people who have set up that opportunity and set that background, laid that background for that opportunity to be realized. So I was thinking to myself, with each wipe that we do out of the sterilized material, with each cut or with each stitch that it's made, may all the people who are involved with this great merit realize the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. I'm sure all of our monks who provide the healthcare as well as who receives healthcare, all of them think the same. With each wound, with each wipe, with each stitch, they all are rejoicing the merits and they transfer the merits to you all. So be reminded that you are so blessed. You're so blessed because you get an opportunity to practice the path as well as to engage in merits. Above all, you engage in merits. That is why our Guru Swami Nuhansi always tell us, always encourage us to engage in merits. If you don't know how to practice the path, that's okay, but engage in merits first of all. keep your mind in a pleasant environment. That is what which lays the background for you to engage in merits. And I'm sure you have taken that opportunity so much. That is why you know the value and the advantage of these kinds of opportunities. But here's the thing. I want to make sure that you use that opportunity not only in the sermon and in the Gateway College, but also in your lives, where you are not with the teacher, while you are not listening to a sermon. That is a big challenge. In fact, that's a challenge which I couldn't face. When I look at you, I get a feeling that you all are my mothers, my fathers, my brothers and sisters. And you are the one who nourished the sasana. And you all deserve this, you should deserve this opportunity. Because without the help that you all provide to the sasana, we can't practice and we can't be free like this. Therefore, you also should get the similar opportunity to practice the path. But alas, you're so busy. But being busy is not an excuse when it comes to practicing the path. That is why our teachers always tell us to preach this teachings in a way that can be practiced in our day-to-day lives. Therefore, if you want to engage in merits in your day-to-day life, there is something that has to be achieved, which is your pleasant mindset. I'm sure that all of you step outside your home with a pleasant mindset. But can you maintain that mindset? What if that a person tries to overtake you when you're driving the car, and you step outside with a very pleasant mindset? Maybe you chant the noble metta, the Arya Maitri, while being in the car, right? So your smile tells me something. Okay. Then the person behind you is trying to overtake and is honking the horn quite repeatedly, then flashes some lights. Then what happens? Then suddenly the Arya Maitri which is being played, it suddenly stops in your mind, but it is continuously playing in the speaker. So this is an example scenario that happens right when you step outside your home. Then in your workplace, it always goes as planned, right? Very calm and quiet. And they also have very pleasant mindsets. Is that the reality? So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to make sure that you all maintain that pleasant mindset even at these challenging times. When you confront a situation where you don't like to face, these are the moments that are challenging for you to maintain the pleasant mindset. Because a pleasant mindset if it is challenged or if it becomes an unpleasant mindset, something terrible happens. These are not my words. Manasache paduttena bhasativa karotiva tato nan dukkha manveti chakkanga vahatupada. If it is said or done with an unpleasant mindset, manasache paduttena, if something is said, bhasativa, if something is done, karotiva, tato nan dukkha manveti. Something that will lead to suffering will happen. What is that? So what happens? What will affect suffering? It's nothing else than a demerit. A demerit will occur if something is done or said with an unpleasant mindset. As opposed to something is done or said with a pleasant mindset. Manasache pasannena bhasativa karotiva tato nan sukha manveti chayava anupayi. If something is said or done with a pleasant mindset, something that will lead to what? Happiness. What leads to happiness? Can you tell me a synonym for happiness or the synonym for joy that is also not my words? Sukhasetan adivachanam punyanti. Punyan means merits. So merit is a synonym for happiness or joy. If you give happiness, you will get happiness. That is a law that governs this universe. You all know by now. What you give is what you get. So if you don't have the happiness, or if you don't have a pleasant mindset, how can you donate it to someone else? First of all, we have to have the thing that we should give to others. We have to share. For you to share something, first of all, we have to have it. And it's a small trigger that it generates this happiness in our hearts and minds. And if we can identify this trigger, now that is the challenge. Not knowing about this trigger is actually a part and parcel of ignorance. I'll tell you how this happens. When you confront something that you don't like, for example, if someone tries to accuse at you for something that you haven't done. These are the things that have never happened to you, right? Right? No one in your vicinity never even thinks of doing it. Okay. If it happens to you, so think carefully. What is the kind of mindset? Will you have a pleasant mindset or an unpleasant mindset? That is our, I don't like to say that a natural instinct. In fact, it's a completely unnatural and completely artificial inclination. Because you know by now, the formation of jati, is it natural? Is it a natural feeling? Or it's a completely artificial feeling? It's an artificial feeling because a existing feeling, or the feeling of existence. It's only a feeling. Existence can never be achieved, because that is completely against the rules of this law, the laws of the nature. Therefore, only a perception or a feeling could be generated of an existence or a persisting time, what you refer to as self. Therefore, but when it is the norm of the mind, now with that kind of mind you could say that, okay, it's a natural inclination. So let's keep it like that. You are naturally inclined. I'm not telling you are, right? Right? I'm not targeting at you. But if you have these inclinations in your mind, now let us think about how it happens. So when someone talks about something that you have done or something that you haven't done in a tone of accusation, now first thing that comes to your mind is, I didn't do it. No, you're mistaken. I didn't do it. That is a mistake. Of course it's a mistake, but I didn't do it. First of all, what are we trying to do? We're trying to safeguard ourselves. I'm not telling that this is bad or good. This is what happens. And look carefully what happens as a result of this. We're trying to safeguard our self. Now, is there any place for the practice of the Dhamma? Now, what are we safeguarding? The very thing that we need to question, whether it is true or not. But without questioning it, we are safeguarding it. We are completely blinded by the ignorance. So therefore, I will tell you. So what happens as a result of this? Now, when we are correct, when we are right, so, and something is wrong, in fact, there's a mistake, something has happened. Now, naturally, you are trying to point out where the fault is, right? So can you see this finger? This is the index finger, right? Why is it called the index finger? It has an ability to index, right? So the tip of this index finger is very powerful. Do you know why that is? Because that is where that tip lies of that index finger. It lies a notion of what? It depends where it is directed at, right? If you point your index finger at someone else, right? Because when we are right, we are trying to find where the fault is. So the fault cannot be here, right? Can it be here? No, it can never be here, right? Because I'm always right. That is the feeling. Isn't that the feeling? When we are blinded by the ignorance, I'm always correct. You're mistaken. Sometimes we are very kindly trying to give evidence to prove that. We might be very kind in our notion. Whereas the fact that what comes in and bubbling rage might be popping up in our minds, right? The notion might be very friendly and kind. Please don't get upset with me. right? So this is the ugly truth of the minds. If you are aware of this, at least you can be aware when it happens, at least much later than that. By being aware, these cycles will reduce its significance or with intensity. They might not happen at the same level of intensity. It'll reduce little by little. So when this tip of the index finger, it actually tries to find something, but not this, right? This always, it's like a, it is repulsed from ourselves, right? It never tries to reach here. It is always pointed towards outside. Why does it happen this way? Because this is what we have been practicing so far. When we direct our finger at someone or something, something significant happened in our mind. So this is always a mental reference, okay? Can you see these three fingers? Where are they pointed at? They are pointed at ourselves. These three fingers are the desire, aversion, and delusion. When the desire, aversion, and delusion comes and hit your heart, it defiles, because these are the defilements. It defiles and it creates an unpleasant mindset. An unpleasant mindset thereafter does something very catastrophic. As you may have heard, there is something called, this might be a bit technical for you, Anantara and Samanantara. But don't worry, I will explain what that means. Samanantara, that is the background. It is the background where something else is attracted at. I'll take a simple analogy to explain this phenomenon. So you know how a radio works. When we tune a radio to a certain frequency, only a certain radio channel can be heard. But is that the only radio wave that we are surrounded, or the radio is surrounded? No. There are many other signals with various other frequencies. But how does the radio attract the exact specific signal out of all other signals? It is through this phenomenon. In today's day and age, we refer to it as the harmonism or the harmonics, right? So in physics, you might have learned this phenomenon. So when the radio is tuned at a certain frequency, the radio also creates a new signal of that same frequency. And the signal that the radio is surrounded with, now, according to the intensities or the frequencies of that signal, the newly synthesized signal of the radio, now it changes, it variates. A small variation, maybe in its intensity or its frequency. So when we measure the changes of frequency, it is referred to as frequency modulation. And when it refers to the changes of the amplitude, it's called the amplitude modulation, FM and AM. So usually these days, you only have come across FM, right? So with the changes of the frequency of the radio waves, the newly synthesized radio frequency also changes. Now, what has happened? The radio cannot absorb the original frequency, but it can monitor the changes of the frequency that it generates. Because the radio frequency that comes from, that is surrounded with, it has some changes and it harmonizes with the frequency. The radio that generates, the wave that is generated by the radio, when it changes with the frequency, with the original radio frequency, now it can have an idea of the actual variation of the radio wave. Now what has happened is, the wave that is generated by the radio, it acts like the background. And for this background, something else is attracted. What is something else? The radio frequency, which has the same, exact same frequency. Is that a complex example? Okay, let's go to a different example then. Let's say, you know when, I mean, you don't go fishing, right? So, when people fish, they had a bait at the hook. Let's imagine there's a group of fish who don't like a certain bait. There's one specific bait that should be hung to the hook if someone needs to fish that. Their taste is different, right? Let's say like that. So if you want to fish that specific fish, you can't hang just a normal ordinary bait. You have to find this exact specific bait and hang it on the hook, and you have to wait. Then no other fish will come, but only that specific fish will come. So what is that bait? That bait is like the samanantara, that is the background. And who are the fish that comes? That is the anantara, right? So I'm referring to this phenomenon. Now imagine, depending on the mindset that you create for your mind right now, what comes at you will change. It will be determined by that. The characteristics of your mind right now will determine your next minds. Because let us remind how this process happens, right? These are some pebbles, right? Have you seen these pebbles? Okay. What do they signify? These are the energy stores of the karmic strand. Now, as you can remember, these are the five aggregates: Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinyana. And one Rupa comes and generates these five. And you know this process. Okay. How do you know that which energy packet or an energy egg, as we might refer to them, which kind of energy packet will rupture and release its energy. What determines which energy packet will be released? Depending on what factors will it be determined? Exactly. Depending on the mindset, or it's called the mind base. It's not the mind itself, it's the mind base. It's the root of the mind. Therefore, depending on the characteristics of the or the features of the root of the mind, it'll determine which kind of energy packet in the karmic strand will be released and will come into realization. If that's the case, if our mindset is unpleasant, what kind of vipaka will come? Can you imagine? The vipakas that you might like or dislike. You won't like that. It will be, actually, you know, karma should happen for this energy to be get trapped as in the karmic strand. That is why it's called karmic strand, right? Otherwise, if you are an arihant, you will no longer have a karmic strand, but the energy which is captured, which is there already, will be resulting. Navang natti sambhava. Right? The arahant only have stopped the generation of new karma. So these packets of energy will be released depending on the characteristic of the mind base. When a karma is performed, it is performed also by a similar mindset. Therefore, a similar mindset is, if the similar mindset is occurred in another mind, then what should happen? That similar energy will be resulted and it will give rise to a similar mind. So just imagine, if you did a demerit, maybe not right now, maybe it has been done maybe thousands of years ago or thousands of lifetimes ago. Now you can't remember it. You have no idea what we have given. But it has been already done. Can we undo it? No. Now we can't undo it. Now the energy is stored there. If it happens to, or if it should come to realization, what should happen? A setup has to be there. Otherwise it can't come to realization. Just imagine a radio station broadcasts signals, but there's no other radio to receive it. Now how can we hear that radio's channel? There's no way. Therefore, the environment has to be there. Without the environment, without the samanantara, that vipaka will never come into existence. But what are we doing by doing this? Now we are creating that unpleasant environment de novo. We are synthesizing an artificial environment of unpleasant, simply. That could be of maybe rage, or desire, aversion, or with pride, with anything. When an unpleasant environment is achieved, now that summons all the vipakas that we have performed in this infinite long journey of samsara that is yet to come into realization. Therefore, it makes the unpleasant environment worse. When you protect and safeguard yourself and try to point out the faults that has been done by others or some other processes, this automatically happens. Therefore, be aware. Where actually we fail at this moment, because not because we are trying to correct the fault, that is completely something else, because a teacher has to correct their children or the students. A parent has to make discipline their children. This is completely different from this. When you try to discipline a child, or if you are a teacher, right, then the setup is completely different. You don't have any kind of you are not trying to compete with them, and you're not trying to safeguard yourself. You're actually trying to safeguard themselves out of something, out of a bad habit maybe. Actually, your mind is so compassionate. Your compassion might be seen as you may raise your voice against that child, but that voice is out of pure compassion. That is why, ladies and gentlemen, it is said that you can never judge a person, because the characteristics of the mindset cannot be seen from outside facial expressions or anything else. Therefore, the Lord Buddha had asked us not to judge anyone. Why? Because we too will be judged. What is the meaning? When you try to judge someone as good or as bad, the same karma will be done by ourselves. Let us go forward in this explanation. When a similar mind occurs, it creates and it worsens the unpleasant mindset, and it generates further demerits. But what happens if you realize what happens at this stage? Can you ever create a mind out of a karma that is performed by someone else? Do these karmic eggs or the energy stores, energy packets, do they get crisscrossed within the minds, right? So if you have performed something, some bad karma in your past life, can you transfer those bad karmas to someone else? Then why do you do merit transfers? How do you do merit transfer? Can't you transfer the demerits as well? Now you know the meanings. The meaning of merit transfer is not like transferring some amount of money from your account to someone else. Right? It's not simple like that. You can ask others to rejoice in the merits that you have done. By rejoicing, they create their merits then and there. And you don't reduce your amount of merits by no means. That is why, by sharing, if you share money, what will happen? The amount of money that you have will be reduced. But if you share merits, if you transfer merits, will it happen the same? No. Your merits are going to be the same. And you are allowing others to rejoice in the merits that you have done. And you are creating an opportunity, an environment for others to rejoice and create their own merits. So that is the meaning of the merits transfer. Can't you transfer the demerits the same way? Of course you can. When you create an unpleasant mindset, what happens? The same thing happens. Your demerits will be transferred to others that surrounds you. Actually, this doesn't happen this way because you are aware of this. But this might happen the other way around. Right? Just imagine you talk to someone who actually tries to argue with you. Right? Why are they trying to argue with you? Now, who has argued first? If you are aware, if you are not aware, you will tell me that they are the ones who tried to argue at me first. So I didn't even try to argue with them. I just wanted to say hello. Right? But if you looked at it very closely, you will tell a different story. Actually, what happened was, let's imagine, you had a very pleasant mindset and you actually said hello to them with a very warm heart. And they didn't have a good day at home. And they started on a very bad tone. Now, who has the fault? On a superficial level, it is very evident that they started this argument. But why has it to be you to hear that, those specific words of arguments or those the tone of accusation? Why was it you who experienced that accusation from that person? Has it been his karma or has it been your karma? Who heard it? We heard it. If we heard it, can it be a karma that is performed by them? No. This is our karma. It is our vipaka. Therefore, if you confront someone who has been angry, why are they angry? Is it because of their own fault? Remember this. We have done enough and good amounts of demerits in this long journey of samsara because we haven't met the correct teachers, not always. Fortunately, now we have met the greatest teachers. But up until now, do you think that we met the correct teachers who showed us this path, who showed us how minds work, how karmic strand work, and how those karma come into realization? No. We were completely unaware. Therefore, we always found the fault at others. Therefore, we were pointing our index fingers at everything else but ourselves. But if it happens, if the same thing happens right now, when we have met the correct teachers, the greatest teachers of them all, if it still happens, that is not good. That is why I'm sharing this with you all. Try to see the truth when it happens. The truth is right in front of you. You have to improve your eyes of wisdom to see it. You don't have to see anywhere else. It is right in front of you. If you are aware, if your eyes of wisdom has been opened, now you will be able to see it as it is. But if it is closed, you will see a story The story will have ups and downs. And the story will be spun around yourself, your family, and your belongings, your properties and everything. And that story will start with a birth, and it seems like it will end with a death. But no, it will not end with the death. This story goes on forever. Therefore, when someone tries to find fault with you, don't see them as someone else. It is the reflection of yourself. What we give is what we get. The ignorance of this very thing is so powerful. It creates a separate story, and it creates a picture to you, and it seems like that someone else is blaming at me. Someone else is accusing at me. Therefore, I must safeguard myself. Don't fall for this trap. Why are they accusing at you? Because I have accused someone. Someone whom? Like whom? Someone like me, who I am today. Okay, now this is the most interesting part. Now, you all are people who have dedicated your life towards practicing the path. Isn't that the truth? I believe it so. That is why you come here. If that's the case, if a person comes to you and starts blaming, can it happen? Right? It happens to us as well. So, especially when it happens to us, and when it happens to people like you all who have dedicated your lives towards realizing the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. Now, you have created a certain amount of certain degree. I'm sorry. Created an environment in your mindset, in the mind base. What is that environment? An environment to attain this ultimate bliss of Nibbana. And to that kind of environment attracts a vipaka of someone blaming at you. Now, can you imagine about the karma that has created this kind of vipaka? Now, if we are blamed, we must have blamed someone. But to whom have we blamed? The karma will be attracted the same way that it has been performed. That is why when we say what we give is what we get, the way that we have given is the way that we will be received. That's also the same. That matches exactly the same way. So, can it happen if we have blamed someone who are very demeritorious, or who have actually done something wrong, a person who has, let's say, we have blamed or we have hit our children in order to discipline them. Let's say, so this has happened way ago, maybe thousands of lifetimes ago, when you were a parent and you had a very mischievous child and you want to discipline them and you hit them. Let's say you blamed them. But what was the intention with your heart and mind? To make them discipline and to safeguard themselves out of being disciplined. Now, but you hit them, let's say, with rage in your heart. Now, a demerit has been performed, has been done. Can you get the result of this demerit right now when you try to attain Nibbana, right? So let's say, let's not take your son as an example, then you might be confused, right? Let's say you have hit someone who has committed theft, right? You are not related to them. You have hit someone who has committed theft with rage, of course, and a demerit has been done. Now you are trying to, so this has happened thousands of lifetimes ago. Now after thousands of lifetimes, now you are trying to attain Nibbana as saints, right? Now, can you get the result of the karma that you did thousands of lifetimes ago right now? Yes, of course. But my point here is, can the same karma bring an effect to you right now? Because to whom have you tried and hit? A person who has stolen. If you are to get the vipaka of that karma, you also has to steal. When you steal only, you can get the vipaka of that karma. But you are not stealing right now. You are trying to attain Nibbana. Right? But you're still being accused and blamed. Isn't it? You're still, he's being accused and blamed when you're neglected, you're harassed, everything else, while trying to attain and achieve your salvation. So, which kind of people have you done the same thing to get this vipaka at this setup where you are trying to attain Nibbana? Is it fair? As you have heard, that nature is always fair. If you are honestly trying to attain Nibbana, everything that you have done to the noble ones, to the people that who have honestly tried and achieved their salvation, they will come at you. Because all this along, if you are not honestly achieving the salvation, they were not coming to realization all this long. But when you are trying to do so, they are awaiting to come at you. But don't be afraid, right? Now there's a way out of this. I'm not saying that it's a complete remedy. No. But for 90%, let's say, it works. It's a shield against this. The shield is the noble metta. I will tell you how it happens, how it becomes a shield. Because thousands of lifetimes ago, when you have committed that's like a crime, right? Maybe a small word against a noble one, it's a crime. That's how virtuous they are. So they come at us as a huge blame or an accusation, but we have given a small word. Now you can see, when you are trying to achieve Nibbana, achieve your salvation, why it is not easy? Because of our own actions. And if you find faults with them, again, what are we doing? We are doing the very same thing that we have been doing all this along. Don't fall for this trap. when you confront with something or with some scenario, some situation where you don't like to face, there's a way of thinking, there's a pattern of thinking that you will have to start and train yourselves. This is not something that we are used to. We have to train ourselves, we have to train our minds. During the time of training, it will be hard, of course. It's not going to be easy. But if you are trained, then it will become a habit. It will come natural. It will be natural for you to keep on thinking like that. So there's a classical example to explain this. When you wake up in the morning and you go to the washroom and you examine your teeth in the mirror, now you see there's some dirt. Now you take your toothbrush and apply some toothpaste. Where are you going to apply the toothpaste and with your toothbrush? On your teeth. But how did you know that your teeth is dirty? Through the mirror. But you saw only the dirt on the mirror. You never saw the dirt on your teeth. But you believed. Actually, that's a belief, right? You believe that the mirror is so fair. The mirror reflects the light that comes directly from you. And the mirror never distorts the light, the rays of light. And you took it for granted. And you thought, you told yourself, okay, if the mirror shows something like this, the same thing must occur in my teeth as well. Therefore, I must brush my teeth, not the mirror. Why are you laughing? When a person comes at you and starts arguing with you, with whose teeth are you going to brush? That's why, ladies and gentlemen, you forget sometimes. Sometimes you forget where you should start and clean. It's your own teeth. It's not the teeth of the person who comes at you. What we give is what we get. Therefore, if someone comes and blames at us, it's our own reflection, nothing else. Why does it happen at this stage, at this background, when we try to achieve our salvation? Because we have done the same to someone who has really tried to achieve their salvation, maybe thousands of lifetimes ago. And when it happens, try to look through your past and try to visualize yourself in the actions of the person who is in front of you. Then you will feel that, oh dear, what have I done? What have I done in this infinitely long journey of samsara? Have I rebuked? Have I insulted people who are trying to achieve their salvation like this? Like this, you can come into your realization. And you will never find faults with them. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, this is extremely difficult. This is not going to be easy if you are starting this right now. But if you have practiced so far, now it will become natural. It will be natural to you. But if you are starting to practice like this, it's never too late, because you are still human and you can understand this. It's not never too late. Start practicing. This is the most difficult step, which is to identify them as your own reflection. When you are trying to achieve the salvation, this step has to be achieved. And then, here comes the other scenario. Now when they come at you and blame you, now let's go back to the previous story. Now we were the people who did the same harassment. Without knowing the virtues of the noble ones, we have done that. How do we know? We are experiencing the effect right in front of us. Isn't that the very evidence to prove that we ourselves must have done it in the first place? It is. It certainly is. So now, beyond any doubt, you can prove to yourself that it was myself who committed this. And they shouldn't be paying the price. But what is happening right now? Aren't they paying the price for a karma that you have done? Tell me. If you go amongst a group of people and if suddenly you lose your temper, now you start blaming at everyone else, now whose vipakas are you going to attract? Are you going to attract your own vipaka? Are you going to attract your own vipaka? So, listen very carefully, right? Now, you are going to a group of people and you lose your temper and you are starting blaming at everyone else. Now, who are blamed? Everyone but you. You don't blame yourself, right? Now, whose vipakas are those? Everyone else. So they consume their vipaka. And what are you doing? You're accumulating the vipaka. And you're performing the karma. Therefore, all that karma becomes, gets stored up in the karmic strand, and they will be come into realization in another time. So this is how the demerits are transferred. Can you see? The demerits that are done by others all of a sudden are transferred at your account. Be very mindful. Don't be confused. Okay? If you lose your temper, who is going to accumulate the vipaka? You are going to accumulate the bad karmas that are performed by everyone else. This phenomenon is known as, let's give a name. So, have you heard about the messenger? Right? So, like that, you are the messenger of nature here. So through you, all of others' bad vipakas are being drawn. It's like a portal. When a portal opens, it reveals something from it, right? So through this portal that you have opened, all the bad vipakas come at others who get blamed. Don't fall for this trap. So this phenomenon is referred to as nature's punisher. You become a punisher of the nature. Nature uses you as a punisher unless your ignorance you have eradicated your ignorance. Your only fault is with that you haven't eradicated your ignorance. Ignorance of the truth that we speak of right now. The nature will not choose you as the nature's punisher if you have rid of ignorance. That is the effect of this Dhamma. Therefore, if you have a mindset which is infected with ignorance and attachment, now it can act like it. The nature can use that mindset as a punisher to punish others who have committed bad deeds in their past lives. Therefore, when you got angry and when you blamed others, when you come to your realization, you might be blamed to yourself, right? Oh, why did I do that? I shouldn't have said that. That is true. A vipaka actually came into realization. That is what happened. But the problem is, whose vipaka is that? Whose vipaka was that? Was it yours? It is true that you acted like the nature's punisher. That is true. But it was a vipaka of someone else. Why was it you to act like a portal or to act like a messenger or a punisher? Because you were not aware of this phenomenon. Therefore, what can you say about the person who is in front of you when you are trying to achieve your salvation? A person comes in front of you and blame you, accuse you. What are they doing? They are also doing the same thing. They are the nature's punishers. The nature is using them as a punisher for us to get the vipaka of what we have done in our past. But don't forget at this moment, who were the nature's punisher when we did the crime in the first place? We were the nature's punisher to the noble ones who were practicing the path back at then. Those noble ones actually saw that. Out of ignorance, we were performing something that even without our knowledge. Their infinite level of compassion was upon us. They also understood that it is not our fault. It is their fault. Excuse me. Like what you reflect right now. If someone starts accusing at you, now you can see that this is not the problem of this person. I have done the very same thing myself. Therefore, nature is always fair. I deserve this. When you know that you deserve it, you stop retaliating. Retaliation only happens when you are not aware of what we have done. When you think that I'm correct, I'm right, I shouldn't be punished. These thoughts happen because we are not aware. We are not aware of the truth. What has been given, that is completely blindfolded. We cannot see that. But if it is seen, if what we have given is seen, we will never try to retaliate. With that knowledge, you stop retaliating and you see the innocence of the nature's punisher. Why do I say that? They are innocent. They are completely ignorant. Are they the people who, with the complete amount of wisdom, can an arahant become a nature's punisher? willingly. I mean, they also can become a nature's punisher. For example, they, by mistake, without a will, without intention, they also can become the nature's punisher. I'm not talking about that. With a will, with an intention, can they ever become a nature's punisher? No. Only a person with complete ignorance and attachment can become a nature's punisher. So, how do you feel for them? If you have realized this truth, if you have understood and applied these concepts of Dhamma, can you try and argue with them? Now you know that you are much above them, and you will try and safeguard not yourself, but you will safeguard them. Why? Because can they safeguard for themselves? No. They're like a newborn baby. When you see a newborn baby, what do? They're always crying. Do they blame at you? Do you blame at them? Why do you cry always? Don't you know how to keep your mouth shut? You don't ask like that. You take them lovingly and nourish them. Isn't that the same way that you should do with the nature's punishers? Because, ladies and gentlemen, if not for you, who else should express this noble metta? You should become like a mother, like a father to everyone else that surrounds you. Because with the realization that you carry upon your hearts and minds, you will become a mother and a father, not only to your children, but also to the entire human race, not only the human race, even beyond. This is why it is said, the noble compassion has no boundaries. Because whatever come at you, you have already forgiven. Not only forgive, you try to safeguard others. You always try to safeguard the people who come to damage you, to harm you. This is how it is possible. It happens with the realization. It cannot be practiced artificially. It always starts with realization. When you go back to the story, when we did that rebuke or the accusation, those noble ones realized that it was their fault, therefore I deserve to be talked like this or be treated like this, but I will safeguard them. Why? Because when they try to attain Nibbana, when they try to achieve their salvation, what will come at them? The karma that they are performing right now. Right? When that karma comes at them, they should have a protection to get away from it. Otherwise, they cannot achieve Nibbana. Because what they have done right now is a revilement of the noble ones. With the effect of this revilement, it will be much harder for them to attain their salvation. Therefore, to safeguard them, what have they expressed from the bottom of their heart? The pristine noble metta, the noble compassion. How do you know that we all received the noble compassion of the noble ones? of whom we committed the noble revilements of the noble ones. Because when we receive the effect of it, when we get accused, when we get blamed from people, when we try to achieve our salvation, if you have the ability to express the noble compassion back at themselves, now that is the evidence to prove yourself that you got the blessings of the noble ones from whom you did the noble accusations or the revilements. There's no other way to get away from this. It is like paying the debts. The debt can only be paid through the noble compassion. Unless you safeguard the salvation of the nature's punisher that you come across, you cannot safeguard your salvation. Isn't it fair? Whether it is fair or not, that is what happens. It is fair because what you give is what you get. If you safeguard the salvation of someone else, then only your salvation will be safeguarded. Without doing this, can you please tell me, how can you safeguard your salvation? Right? Because one could say that if others don't attain salvation, I must safeguard my salvation and I must achieve my Nibbana. Right? I must achieve my Nibbana. Can you tell me how I'm going to do that? I must achieve my Nibbana? Is this possible? There are no shortcuts. Unfortunately. Or fortunately. We cannot lie to ourselves, ladies and gentlemen. This is extremely practical. The practice of this Dhamma, of these teachings, is extremely practical. That is the beauty of these teachings. This is not very philosophical and very extremely scientific and theoretical. No. It is very practical. As I told you earlier, the truth happens right in front of you. And it is the failure of our eyes of wisdom to see it. But when you improve it, you'll be able to see it at least to a certain degree. The truth to a certain degree. The degree that you see will be improved more you see it. That is why. If you find yourself as correct, but others as wrong, your mindset becomes unpleasant. And a demerit will happen, which is like a poison to the path that you practice. If you can stop that forcefully, because it will never be stopped naturally. Why? Because it has been a practice. There's a lot of inertia in it. Just imagine a wheel that is rotated, is rotating with a very high speed. And with a very high, that wheel has a very high mass in it. Therefore, there's a lot of inertia in it. Can you stop that wheel all at once? No, it will take some time. How long has this wheel been rotating? For the entirety of samsara. We have never tried to stop it ourselves because we didn't know there's such a wheel which drives us. We were completely ignorant. Fortunately, or due to the merits that we have been accumulating all this far, we have come across the teachers, the great master, the great philosopher, and he has revealed the truth once and for all. And we don't have to go and realize it. We don't have to go and find it elsewhere. It is already been found and revealed. And we have come across that those teachings with a lineage of teachers. And you all are listening to it. We are being exposed day in and day out. And with that, we change our attitudes. And we change our beliefs. And we change the way how we see the world. And that wheel can be stopped, but not all at once. Don't ever imagine that those practices will change, will be stopped all at once. Therefore, I recommend you not to resolve certain things that you actually cannot meet. For example, let's say, If you firmly take a resolve that, okay, from today onwards, I will not get angry. Right? I'm not going to blame anyone else. No, I will not. It's very good. There's nothing wrong with it. But if you do so, don't get discouraged. When you cannot maintain it, you are not a failure. That is why sometimes people come at us and tell that, you know, Swami Mahansa, I'm a failure. I still get angry. I still blame at others. Right? The self-blame has been their song. They always feel that guilt. Don't feel like that. That is even worse than blaming. Blaming at others. Blaming yourself is worse than blaming at others, because you are completely discouraged to practice the path. You have lost faith in that you can do this actually. Don't ever fall for that trap. In fact, you cannot determine that you are a failure or not just by getting angry. Can you determine that wheel is decelerating or accelerating just by seeing that it's rotating? Can you say that this wheel, which is rotating, is decelerating or accelerating? By seeing that, oh, it still rotates, so it cannot be decelerating. Can you say like that? No, the decelerating wheel will also rotate. You can only measure the reduction or the increment of the velocity, right? Something like that. You cannot comment about your failure or your success just on the fact that you still get angry. But you can do something like this. The moment that you got angry, then it will take some time for you to come back to your senses and realize that, okay, what did I do? Now you come back to your senses. I shouldn't have said that. Now all that self-blame and the guilt and everything comes. Now there's a time duration from the moment that you performed it and the moment that you came to your realization. Now that is the delay. There's a certain delay always, right? For you to come to your realization, it will take some time. Sometimes this delay will go on for days.
or weeks. That depends on the amount of practice that you have had. If you are still starting, right, it may go for weeks. And is it bad? No, that is where you start. So in, let's say, for someone, it may go for 2 weeks. So during that, those 2 weeks, if someone asks you, can you remember that person came and blamed you? Yes, I blamed him. I should have blamed him even more. So that is how you respond. Because you are, it's still the latent time. So not aware. We are completely blindfolded. But after 2 weeks, now you come back to your senses and realize, I didn't do what Swaminvansi told us that day. Oh dear, what did I do? Now you come back to your senses. And it took you 2 weeks for the realization to happen. Okay, so that is where you are right now. The 2 weeks. Now, again after some time, you again get angry. And you again blame at everyone else. And now, it doesn't take you 2 weeks. It takes you, let's say, 13 days. Now you tell me, is he a failure? He's not a failure. It's actually a moment to celebrate. Why? The time taken for the realization to happen has decreased. Now he is someone who actually tries to practice the path. Don't blame yourself unnecessarily. Blame yourself if it is necessary. If, let's imagine that it doesn't take 2 weeks, now it takes 3 weeks. Now if that's the case, now you should be alarmed. Or you're still not aware. It's been months. Right? I'm just kidding. Right? If that's the case, be alarmed. But don't blame yourself unnecessarily. Because that self-blame will induce a guilt, which is very hard to get away from. If you're guilty, tell me, how can you, without the help of the Dhamma, that is why, right? If you have found the solution with Dhamma, the guilt will never come at you. Without the help of Dhamma, and without distracting yourself, right? How can you get away from guilt? Extremely hard. These are the things that people suffer a lot, I must say. But there is a solution with the Dhamma. But for Dhamma, for that Dhamma, that pristine Dhamma to be practiced, you must have a pleasant mindset in the first place. So how can you create a pleasant mindset if you're already guilty? If you're already guilty, you can never create a pleasant mindset. Therefore, you can engage in merits. And you cannot understand the Dhamma. You will understand the words, but words are not the Dhamma. You should know by now. Even though you understand each and every word, that is not the Dhamma. Dhamma is a realization that happens within you. That should happen with a correct, pleasant mindset. That is why you have created more than 650 pleasant mindsets. Therefore, you should deserve this. You deserve this. You deserve to realize this Dhamma. Don't fall in the trap of guilt. The guilt consumes you. It never allows you to think freely. If you don't have realized the Dhamma, if you don't know how to use the Dhamma to come out of your guilt, you only have the help of distraction. You may try and distracting yourself, but again, the same guilt comes back at you. Therefore, first of all, engage in merit. So, for that kind of problem, there's only one way out. Engage in merits and create a pleasant mindset. Then listen to the Dhamma with that pleasant mindset. Then, through that realization, you will find the solution for that guilt. It's not easy, ladies and gentlemen, because we come across people who are suffering, who are agonizing in pain with so much guilt unnecessarily. Because this truth is right in front of them, but still they can't see it. How pathetic. That should not be the case for you all. Because you all are the people who engage in merits and who have created, who have given, who have donated a pleasant mindset to many others. Therefore, you deserve to realize this Dhamma. And I want to add a small point to something that we discussed previously. So can you remember when I told you that if a person comes and blame at you when you're trying to achieve salvation, now you are not trying to rebuke at them and to blame back at them. Now you can see what's really happening. And with that sight, with that realization, now you are going to do something very interesting, which cannot be done by anyone else in this world, unless they have realized the truth. That is, you are getting the responsibility of the nature's punisher. Because what they're doing, what they're committing right now is a great demerit. Can they stop themselves? No. If a small child comes at you with a knife, swinging, right? With a swinging knife, what will you do? Will you encourage them to swing it? Oh, you're swinging it so nicely. Can you swing it much faster than that? Will you do it like that? You will do something in a very non-traumatizing way for the child to stop it and to minimize the harm. Sometimes you may have to tell a lie. Sometimes you may have to distract the child. You'll say, "Pusa, can you see that way? There's a nice birdie." And you grab the knife out of their hands. So you may do various techniques of distraction or anything. Why? You want to safeguard that child. That child is innocent. They don't know anything about the knife's ability to cut and chop. That is how you safeguard the others. The same applies to the nature's punisher, who tries to obstruct your path towards the ultimate bliss. Why have they become nature's punishers? Because they are completely ignorant. Do they know how to protect themselves? They don't have any idea about their own protection. They are like a small child. Therefore, it is our duty to safeguard them. When you do so, you are actually taking the responsibility of the nature's punisher to safeguard them. This responsibility will never be held by anyone else who hasn't understood the Dhamma. That is why, ladies and gentlemen, this duty can only be done
by the disciples of the Lord Buddha. You determine yourself whether you are a disciple of the Lord Buddha or not, determined by just by the fact that you are able to take the responsibility of the nature's punisher to minimize the harm for themselves. When they try to achieve the salvation, this demerit that they are doing right now for themselves will be an obstacle for them. Therefore, I must take the lead and prevent this demerit from here onwards. For that, you may distract them, or you may appreciate them. You may do anything. If you try and appreciate them, if they try and blame again, more than that, you just get away. Why do you get away? Blaming them. I don't want to listen to them. Is that why you get away from them? No. With utmost compassion. There's a general saying among people. Excuse me. To all the people who have done wrong to me, I forgive them and I forget. Forgive and forget has been a very famous quote. Now, what are you doing at this stage? Are you trying to forgive them? Or are you doing something completely opposite to that? You're not forgiving them. You're seeking the forgiveness from them. Why? Because they are not the ones who do wrong to you. We are the ones who do wrong to them. Why? Because we have committed that bad deed by ourselves. So we have done it. What are they doing? They're just reflecting that vipaka back at us. Therefore, we seek forgiveness from them because it is they're so innocent. The nature's punisher is so innocent. They have no idea about what is happening. And they just serve nature as being a punisher. Therefore, if you are very particular, and if you can see this very closely, now you can see that nature's punisher's ability to do demerits is something that they cannot prevent. Therefore, you take the responsibility and safeguard themselves, safeguard them for their betterment. And actually you don't forgive, but you seek for forgiveness. And of course, if you want to forgive someone, why do you want to forget? If you have done something wrong to me, I will forgive you and I will forget you. Why do you have to forget them? Because by their sight or by the occurrence of that thought, it doesn't give you a pleasant mindset. That is why you want to forget it. Actually, although you might say that you will forgive them, but have you forgiven yourself? It's a bitter lump at your throat. That is why you want to forget. Therefore, from this moment onwards, I don't think that you will have to forgive and forget. When a nature's punisher come at you, now you don't have to forgive them and forget. You have something better than that. What is it? First thing is to stop retaliation. How can you? Is it something that you can do
oh, it will happen through realization. It will happen through realization. You cannot stop yourself. It will be stopped through realization. How will it happen? Through realization? Because when you realize that it is something that I have given the same way that I get, then this is just the reflection of myself. This is me. This is my actions through someone else. Therefore, if you can see yourself through the actions of another, now the retaliation stops at that moment. That is the number first. Then you see the nature's punisher as an innocent person, as someone who cannot protect themselves. Then you take the responsibility.
Excuse me.
Then you take their responsibility of safeguarding themselves to achieve their salvation. Maybe thousands of lifetimes later. Who knows? But when that happens, you have their blessing. They have your blessings. How that blessings can happen? Through the noble metta. When you express the noble metta, you safeguard their liberation, their salvation. Automatically, your salvation will be safeguarded. That is how you can achieve your salvation. With that true and honest practice of the noble compassion. There's no other path. Therefore, when you live in the society, always try to maintain that pleasant environment. I can only tell you, teach you the techniques, but practicing is way more difficult. Actually, I didn't know how to keep on practicing that in environment. That is why I came to robes. Because sometimes you may be overwhelmed in certain circumstances that you might come across. Your mind is overwhelmed with all that unpleasantness. At that time, I don't know what to do. Because your teachers are not with you. You're only by yourself. If there's a noble friend with you, you might go and tell them. You can confess them. But if someone is not around you, I didn't know what to do. That's why I came and stayed with my teachers. I gave my whole life without keeping behind anything else to me, because I needed the refuge. Because an untamed mind is so dangerous. It is unstoppable without the help of the noble friends. But you all are so fortunate. You are like a family. In fact, you are our family. Why? Because your family members are with us. Isn't it? That's what makes you our family. You have donated your sons and daughters towards the Mahasangha, towards the Sasana. That's what makes you our family. That is why we are so duty-bound. Therefore, you always are exposed. You are exposed to these teachings. You have your teachers weekly, at least weekly. With that exposure, I'm sure you are changing your lives and you're practicing the path to the best level possible. So I did not go into details of how this, the protection, self-protection happens, right? So if we go into details, since we have some time, when self happens, when you perceive self, are you aware? Are you aware that it's a perception of self? That is why you are trying to safeguard it. Let's say these are three adjacent minds. So, the perception of self or the jati will be formed in all these three minds, right? Through the defilement process, the ignorance, attachment, giving rise to the perception of self. So when you perceive this self, and when you realize, or when you understand, when you interpret it as the self, not as the perception of self, right? Then what is that interpretation? It connects the dots. The self is what connects the dots. But what is the reality? Is there a line? Or are they just the dots? They're just the dots. But what connects the dots is the deception. Since you all bear minds, the mind has the right to be deceived. That's a right of the mind that should be fully respected. Do you know why? Nothing else could ever be deceived. Only a mind could be deceived. Therefore, do you want to get away from that quality of the mind? Then that is no longer a mind. If there's a mind, that can be deceived. Therefore, if you don't know how to separate a line from dots, that is simple ignorance. Do you know what a line is? Do you know what are dots? Are dots a line? Is line a dot or a few dots? No. But when dots are combined and when it feels like a line, you cannot differentiate between the two. Then you take it for granted. You take your line for granted, yourself. That is why it always brings about self-protecting mechanisms. You always want to safeguard yourself because it's always right. It's always pristine. It is me. Have you ever doubted about that? Doubted in sense, not like this. Might I be wrong? Not like that. Yes, you may have doubted like that. Could this be me or a bunch of perceptions? When you are not aware, when you are aware, of course, when you are not aware, that means you are completely blind. You are not listening to the sermon or practicing the path. when you are you, do you ever question you being you? Being I is, it's hard and fast, I. Have you ever questioned yourself? Can you ever question yourself? You can, but who questions? I question. Right? I am questioning myself. When you are not aware of this, always I slips away. The key is to realize the three characteristics of nature, which is anicca, dukkha and anatta. The more and more practice that you get to realize these three characteristics, then you realize that everything in this world is anicca, dukkha and anatta. If everything is anicca, dukkha and anatta, then what about this line or the self? It also should be, if the same characteristic should be applied to myself as well, then only you will start questioning about it. Otherwise, no question at all will pop up in your minds. Because what to question about? It's so solid. It's so clear. There's no question at all. Therefore, what Lord Buddha discovered was, there's no such thing as self, but there is something as the perception of self. And it is, he gave it a name, it is jati. And that jati is a dukkha. And Lord Buddha said that, idam dukkhan. What is the meaning of dukkha? Not in the conventional sense, but in a deeper sense, we know that it is something to fulfill a necessity. By looking at the outcome, now you can comment about the necessity. Now the outcome is the perception of self, which exactly feels like a self. Now what has been the necessity? Can you comment about the necessity or the requirement or the deficiency which created this kind of feeling? The necessity is to experience a persistent world or an existing world. So if that's the necessity, if the necessity is to experience the persistence or the existence, will this perception fulfill that necessity? What do you think? If this perception fulfill that necessity, that necessity will never come back again. Right? But what can you say about that necessity? That necessity is still there in the next mind. Because of that requirement, that deficiency is being fulfilled artificially. Because the necessity is the mother of invention, right? It creates a perception, which is the jati. Jati is formed in all of the minds. When jati is formed, and when jati is interpreted, not as a perception, but as a self, then, in that sense, of course, that fulfills the
necessity.
This line is what fulfills the necessity. Right?
Listen very carefully, right?
This line is what? Fulfilling that necessity, that requirement. Okay, my question now here is, will these dots fulfill that necessity? Will these dots fulfill that necessity of a persistent world, of an existence? No, these dots won't fulfill that necessity. The moment you realize that these are just a bunch of dots, but not a line, what will the mind do? Actually, there's no mind to do things, right? What will happen? Then all that effort will be no longer there. That is what we refer to as detachment. Detachment is a phenomenon. That is the eradication of attachment. Attachment will no longer be there. Then why, I can't say you, why did you attach, right? You didn't attach, but attachment happened. Why did attachment happen? Because it interpreted these dots as a line. It's a matter of fact between line and dots. If you realize these are just dots but not a line, it's not simple like that, right? You have to realize anicca dukkha and anatta and apply that concept. To whom? To this. To this. What is this? This is this. I hope you can understand. To this life experience right now. Right now, what is happening? And that is just a dot. Just a perception. It doesn't have any direct communication with other minds. It's just an isolated dot. Is it me? Is this dot me? Then who is this? Another me? Or the same me? That is what is to be realized. If this is you, okay, let's imagine that this is you. This is not you then. When this happens, how can you say that it was previous you? It's a complete different you. So I'm not talking to the same person then, because there are not people. There are no people, but processes are there. Therefore, you don't have to stop talking while reflecting on this. It's so challenging, I know. It's very challenging for us. And I can't even imagine how it must be challenging for you all. But it's so difficult, so you don't have to do that. Is that the thing that you want me to say? You don't have to do that. We will do it. I'm so sorry, ladies and gentlemen. We all have to face the same exam paper. There's just one paper for all of us. And that is no different for you all. That is why we always encourage you all of you, to come to our monastery and practice it with us. Okay, tell me, would you ever, it's so unfair to ask like that, so, okay, let me rephrase it. So, Aurudhi season comes, right? And just imagine, let me imagine, that your house could only accommodate for few people, limited people. Would you like to invite all your relatives and neighbors come at your house and take residence for the rest of their lives? Can you accommodate them? You can't, because you know for a fact that you don't have enough accommodation. And you know for a fact that you can't earn that lot of amount of money to sustain them. And you know that you cannot be responsible of all the problems that they might face. Right? So not even in the out of the season, you are not going to make that invitation to all your relatives. Your relatives. Right? Now what are we doing here? It's not even Aurudu yet. We are inviting you all to come and visit the monastery. Is that what we are inviting? No, no, no. Take residence with us. Do you think that it's not a burden for us? We know that it's not a burden. We have to carry some responsibility. And don't we know that we have to carry the responsibility of all the problems that we might face? We know all of that. While knowing everything, we still make that invitation with broad arms. Why do we do that? Just come and sit on this chair and you will realize. You have no idea how we feel towards you, because you are the ones who nourish the sasana. And you are missing something. That is why I know that this is a very unfair request. This is a very unfair request, but I'm targeting at the very unfair request. I'm willingly doing that because I want you to experience this. I'm aware there might be some of you who are bound with responsibilities and all sorts of things. I can't pressure on you all. But if there are some of you who have that ability to renounce and join the clan, what are you waiting for? That is what I am asking. Therefore, to commence actually you have already commenced, because some of your children, some of your friends and family members are still with us. I already have joined our family. Therefore, you have already commenced it. There's no commencement. Let's say to commemorate this. The next sermon, and then on next Sunday, will be in our monastery. We warmly welcome you. We are waiting to capture some of you all. It's only a capture of love and kindness. You know what I mean. Because if I got captured, right? Because many people told me that I'm being brainwashed. And you know the story, right? You know what I say right now? If that was a brainwash, may all brains be washed the same way.
I'm just kidding, right? It's not a brainwash. But if someone calls it a brainwash, if there are loved ones who I consider so dearly to me, I will give that brainwash to them out of love and kindness and compassion. So, the next sermon will be in our monastery, and the amount of sacrifice that you have made is so valuable. The only ask of me is to keep on doing that with much vigor and persistence, consistency. With all that consistency and energy, of course, you are going to succeed one day. It might not be at this lifetime. So don't have expectations when it would be. Even our Guru Thero says, don't have expectation. Even for us. Right? So, we might not be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Might not happen at this lifetime. But, if our ultimate goal is that, with that mindset, if we have to die, that will ensure something. Therefore, don't be afraid of the death. Be afraid of not defining your life's goal, your life's purpose. What are you living for? If it is nothing but the salvation of Nibbana, then be afraid. That is what I'm also afraid at. So, with that resolution, with that kind of resolve, you all must have faced the death in your previous lifetime. That is why you got this opportunity, this lifetime. So, that is why you are making use of this time to practice the path, each and every moment in your life. And you are engaging in merits, practicing the paths. That is the purpose of your life. Who might not remember what you have done in your previous lives. And some people don't even believe in the previous lives as well. That is something else. But in this moment, engage in merits and resolve for the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. Okay, so with that note, we will conclude the sermon by transferring the merits. Let us remind ourselves, all the merits that we have acquired today, by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, by listening to Dhamma and reflecting on the Dhamma, and by engaging in various meritorious deeds today, first and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer this merit to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Lord Buddha, and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer these merits to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to practice the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to our Guru Swami Nuhansev and all other monks resident at our monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to our monastery. Let us all transfer our merits and express our gratitude to all those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. Let us also transfer these merits to our devotees, to the friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicine, and to all those who have, and to, as well as the everyone who have shown up their gratitude and expressed their well wishes. Let us also transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, husbands and wives, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles and aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, friends and acquaintances, employees and employees, and to everyone who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in every way, shape or form. May through the blessings of the merits that we have acquired today, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments. May they overcome many obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits to all Devas, Brahmas, primarily the Sakkadeva, and all other numerous gods and deities who have committed to fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer these merits to our guardian deities, who always keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May through the blessings of the merits that we have acquired today, may they prosper in divine powers and wisdom, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits to all our ancestors who have predeceased us, reminding ourselves that all of them have been our friends and family this infinite long journey of samsara. Let us transfer this merits to them. Let us also transfer this merits to all members of the armed forces, including the police force, who always have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost their lives at war, be their friend or foe, rejoice in the merits that we have acquired today. Let us also transfer this merits to all those who lost their lives at natural calamities like tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that all those who lost their lives at natural calamities were our friends and families in this long journey of samsara. Let us transfer these merits to them. May through the power and blessings of all the merits that we have acquired them, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves from the woeful plains and be born in the blissful plains. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And with the power and blessings of all the merits that we have acquired today, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds and thousands of Arihants, and you and I who have assisted this program a success, be an Arhat Unvanse or Arhat Mehen Unvanse in this very life itself and in the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Now the Mahasangha will bless you all with the presence of the, with the chantings of the Noble Metta. Raga ginnen midetva, dvesha ginnen midetva, moha ginnen midetva, nibbana parama sukhayen Sukheta taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukheta taravetva Mamada siyalu loka Siyalu satvayo Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukheta taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukheta taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukheta taravetva ragini niveva dveshagini niveva mohagini niveva nivan sapa labeva නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා තුනුරුවන්ගේ සූවිසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බෙලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝම නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුගිතතර වෙත්වා සාදු සාදු සාදු.